The engine quits, maybe 3 seconds after rotation. You're 50 feet off the ground, airspeed barely above stall, and the runway behind you is right there, full, beautiful, empty runway. And every instinct you have says, turn back. Most pilots who try it die. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, coming to you on Radio Hangar, and this is the piece of scenario-based decision-making I think about more than almost anything else when I watch a student line up for takeoff. Because the decision you make in that moment is not going to be the one you made with calm, rational thinking. It's going to be whatever your gut already had loaded. Which means we need to load the right answer before the scenario ever starts. Before we get into the physics of this, a quick word from our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, engine failure after takeoff. The AOPA Air Safety Institute has studied this scenario in depth, and what they found is stark. Attempts to return to the runway after engine failure on takeoff are successful far less often than pilots expect. And the failures are not close calls. They are stalls, spins, and contact with the ground with almost no altitude left to intervene. Why does it keep happening? Because the human brain is pattern matching against the wrong template. You see a runway, the runway means safety. Turn toward safety. It's logical. But it ignores the physics completely. Let's walk through this together when your engine fails right after rotation. You have three variables working against you at the same time: low airspeed, low altitude, and a very tight geometry problem. The runway is behind you. To get back to it, you need to execute roughly a 180-degree turn, lined up somewhere close to the center line, at an airspeed that allows a survivable touchdown. Here's what the physics says. A typical light trainer, say a Cessna 172, needs somewhere between 300 and 400 feet of altitude to complete that turn safely, and that is in optimal conditions. Wings level going in, best glide held throughout, no excess bank angle, no wind complications on the return leg. 300 feet sounds achievable. But think about where most engine failures actually cluster in the takeoff profile. The statistically most dangerous window is between 50 feet and 300 feet above ground level, right in the gap. And here's where it compounds. To make the turn, you instinctively roll into bank. The moment you add bank angle, your stall speed goes up. At 45 degrees of bank, your stall speed is approximately 41% higher than wings level. If you're flying a Cessna 172 with a power-off stall around 48 knots, you're now looking at roughly 68 knots before you can safely unload the wing. If you're slow when the engine quits, and you will be because you just rotated, that margin disappears fast. There is a second variable almost nobody accounts for in the panic of the moment. What does the departure end of your runway look like relative to where you are now? Some airports have displace thresholds, some have obstacles that narrow the approach path. The runway you're trying to get back to may not actually be usable for its full length from your direction of arrival. Now, I'm not telling you the return to runway is always impossible. That is not the point of this conversation. The point is that whether it is possible or not depends entirely on variables you should be calculating before you start your takeoff roll, not after the prop goes quiet. Here is something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate require you to demonstrate emergency approach and landing procedures. The examiner is looking for your ability to establish and maintain the proper configuration and airspeed. They want to see you identify a suitable landing area and plan your approach. They want to see you fly the aircraft to that area. Notice what the ACS does not say. It does not say the correct response to an engine failure after takeoff is to turn back to the runway. It says establish best glide, identify a suitable landing area, and fly to it. Sometimes the runway is the suitable landing area. Sometimes a field directly ahead is better. That is a judgment call. But it is a judgment call you have to preload before the runway disappears under your tail. So here is the practical framework. Before every single takeoff, especially at airports you do not know, well, you run a quick mental brief on your abort and failure scenarios. It takes 30 seconds, maybe less. First question, if the engine fails at 50 feet, what am I landing on? Not turning back to, what is straight ahead? A road? A field? A parking lot? Trees. Get a picture of it before you roll. Second question, if the engine fails at 300 feet, do I have enough altitude to consider the turn? If you have not done the research for your specific aircraft, talk to your instructor and look at the pilot's operating handbook performance data. Many instructors teach 1,000 feet as a conservative bright line. Below 1,000, land ahead. Above 1,000, consider the options. It is not a hard rule. It is a starting point for the conversation you have with yourself on the ground. Third question, have I actually practiced this? Not just thought about it. Practice the power-off gliding turn from altitude with an instructor until I have physical memory of what the airplane feels like at best glide with a bank in, the prop windmilling, and the stall warning nearby. Because scenario-based decision-making is not just a mental exercise, it is calibrating your instincts to the reality of the aircraft in conditions similar to what you will encounter. A thought experiment does not build the muscle memory that saves your life. Let me give you a scenario to think through. You are departing runway 22 at a non-towered airport. Winds calm, standard day, no density altitude concerns. You are in a Piper Cherokee, loaded to about 80% of gross. You rotate. You are climbing through 150 feet, and the engine loses power. Not full stop, but the RPM drops hard, and you are no longer climbing. Straight ahead, a two-lane road with light traffic and an open field past it. Behind you, 5,000 feet of empty runway. What do you do? If your instinct is to turn back, sit with that and do the math. You are at 150 feet. You need at minimum 300 feet to execute a safe 180-degree turn in a Cherokee. You do not have it. If you roll into that bank and the engine quits entirely, you're going to stall before you get to the runway. You will hit the ground before you recognize what is happening. The answer is, land on the road or the field. Declare the emergency on the common traffic advisory frequency. Fly the aircraft. The insurance adjuster worries about the paint job. You fly the airplane. Now here is the harder scenario. Same setup, same conditions, but the engine failure happens at 500 feet. The calculus shifts. 500 feet is still below most instructors' conservative bright line, but it is closer to viable. Before you make any turn, you are running the memory items. Carb, heat, fuel selector, primer, mixture. Those four items have restarted engines. You have seconds, not minutes, but you work the checklist while you assess what is ahead. If the engine does not respond, now you are weighing options at 500 feet. With proper technique and an aircraft with decent glide characteristics, some pilots have made the return work. But the margin for error is thin. Any excess bank angle, any distraction, any headwind component on the return leg that you did not account for, and the equation tips. This is exactly why the 1,000-foot rule exists as a teaching threshold. Not because 500 feet is always impossible, but because it is the altitude below which the compounding of errors becomes statistically lethal. The teaching threshold is there to protect you from the optimistic version of yourself that thinks it can pull it off. Here is a complication that does not get enough attention. Density altitude. Hot, high, and heavy. Three conditions that shrink every margin you have, and they shrink the return to runway window especially hard. Your climb rate was already degraded, which means your altitude gain per unit of runway was already less than the charts showed on a sea level standard day, which means when the engine quits, you are lower than you expected to be. If you're flying at mountain airports or departing in summer heat anywhere in the country, you need to do this math before you fly, not during the pre-flight briefing in the abstract. Pull out the pilot's operating handbook. Look at the density altitude for the day. Look at your climb performance. Then look at the runway length and the terrain off the departure end and build your abort brief from real numbers, not assumptions. The AOPA Air Safety Institute makes the point that your decision threshold should be calculated with your specific aircraft type at your departure airport. On the day you are flying, it is not a one-size calculation. Now let me talk about the partial power scenario because it is actually the harder decision tree. Full engine failure is relatively clean. The engine is out, you land ahead. The harder version is when you have some power. The RPM drops, the engine is rough, but it is producing something. You can maybe maintain altitude, maybe climb slowly. And now the situation feels more manageable, which makes it more dangerous. A partial power loss is seductive because you feel like you have options, and you do. But those options include the engine quitting completely at any moment, and you need to be positioned for that worst case even while you're managing the better case. The framework for partial loss is fly the aircraft, assess the situation, communicate if it is appropriate, and position yourself for a survivable landing if the power goes away entirely. That means staying within gliding distance of somewhere you can put the airplane down. It means not pressing on across the ridge because you still have some power. It means treating partial loss as the precursor to full loss until you have diagnosed and fixed the cause. If you fix it in the air, great, land and have the airplane looked at. If you do not fix it, you have been positioning yourself for the survivable outcome the whole time. The airman certification standards use the word analyze when describing what they want to see in an emergency scenario. Not recite, not execute the checklist, analyze. The examiner wants to see that you understand the scenario well enough to apply the right procedures to a version of the problem they have not given you before. That is the definition of judgment. It cannot be drilled in, it has to be grown over time through practice and exposure and honest reflection after every flight where something unexpected happened. The best training for engine failure after takeoff is not the scripted version where you know it is coming. It is the one your instructor pulls on you when you are distracted, when you're in the middle of a radio call, when your scan is elsewhere. The unexpected one measures your actual response, not your rehearsed response. If your training has been mostly scripted drills, ask your instructor for scenario-based sessions. Tell them you want unexpected emergencies at unexpected altitudes. Any instructor who is current on modern flight training philosophy will welcome that conversation. The ACS is built around it, and if you are a certificated pilot who has not thought about any of this since your private pilot check ride, this is your nudge. Get back in the airplane with a CFI. Work through some of these scenarios. Currency is not proficiency. Logging hours is not the same as building judgment. The thing about scenario-based decision-making is that the decisions that matter most are the ones you make before the scenario ever begins. Where you will land if the engine quits. What your altitude threshold is for turning back. Whether you have checked the density altitude, whether the terrain ahead looks better or worse than the runway behind you, all of that happens on the ground. Make those decisions there with time, with information, with no consequences for getting it wrong except a revised plan. The AOPA Air Safety Institute has excellent research on engine failure after takeoff scenarios, and it is worth reading before your next flight. You can find more at radiohangar.com. Make the decision before you line up. That is where the flying really happens.